Hi everyone, thanks again for tuning into another episode of Wiser. I'm Laura Schwieger, current M4 and Wiser president. I'm joined by Helen O'Leary.
Hi everybody.
We're so excited today to have Dr. Kristen Freeman here with us. Dr. Freeman graduated first in her medical school class from the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. She went on to complete a general surgery and cardiothoracic surgery research fellowship at the University of Colorado, after which she completed a cardiothoracic surgery fellowship at the University of Florida, during which time she received the Robotic Fellowship Award from the American Association of Thoracic Surgery. Dr. Freeman is currently an assistant professor in the Division of CT Surgery and the Associate Program Director for the Thoracic and Cardiovascular Surgery Integrated and Traditional Residency Training Programs. Thank you so much, Dr. Freeman, for joining us today. To start us off, do you mind just telling us a little bit about your path to surgery and to CT surgery?
Absolutely. I could not imagine being anywhere more important right now than talking with you. So I started off interested in medicine when my older brother was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. He was 13 and I was around 9, and it was a pretty big seismic shift for us and our family. And so that really got me interested in medicine in the first place. And then as my interest sort of became more specific in what's out there for medicine, at the same time, I was going through a lot of sports and had a lot of sports injuries. And so for me, when I was in high school, I broke my hand and I had to have surgery. And so I went in, my hand was broken, and I came out of surgery and it was fixed. And I realized that instead of treating an incurable illness for someone's entire life, maybe, you know, having a problem, being able to fix it made a little more sense for me. And I just really liked the idea of something broken can fix it, and then find the next thing that's broken and fix that. And so that's really where I got my interest in surgery, was from my own surgery. And then from there, everything just sort of continued to fall in line for me. I really loved anatomy. Our medical school does an anatomy award for the top performing student in anatomy. And I just, everything just made sense for me in anatomy. It was very clear. I liked how you look for something in a textbook, you look for it in a cadaver, and boom, there it is. And then if it's not, then, you know, you start wondering, oh, why, and what's the variation? And it was just all very exciting. But I knew that surgery would be a challenging specialty, but I was really excited. And even though the hours were longer on my third year rotations, it just all made sense to me. And I had chosen to do it as my first rotation of third year because I wanted to know right off the bat, am I good at this? And do I like it? Because after years of wanting to do it, I can't imagine rotating and then hating it and then trying to reinvent the wheel and figure out what I'm supposed to do instead. And so it was nice. It was just confirmatory. And from then on, I just sort of continued on the pathway.
Did you have any exposure to CT when you were in medical school, or was it during residency?
I did not. I had no exposure to CT, which looking back was really sad because now one of my biggest mentors, female mentor, was from University of Texas that I met later on after my father had heart surgery in Texas, and I met her, and I wish I had known earlier, but I didn't. And I was paired with a vascular surgeon between first and second year. A lot of medical schools do research and you get paired with anyone in your interest. And I just put surgery, and ultimately I got paired with a young female vascular surgeon. And so that's sort of what I stuck with. I met someone that I thought I could be in the future. And so I went through thinking that I might do general surgery with a vascular surgery fellowship. And it was really just made sense for me to keep going down that pathway. Nothing had made me take a fork in the road until I got through my intern year in general surgery at Colorado. And the last rotation of my intern year was thoracic surgery. The first rotation of my second year was cardiac surgery. And so I had been on the same different parts of the same service for 2 months in a row. And it was sort of the first time you did anything for 2 months in a row and intern year. And I just felt so welcomed. I worked so hard, but the hours didn't bother me because I was interested in what I was doing. And I just felt like I was learning so much. It was incredible. And then I found mentors along the way. They didn't have any female CT surgeons at the time, but I had excellent male mentors throughout the division of CT surgery. I was really set up well doing research with them and finding sort of my niche with publications and going to conferences, meeting people, getting to network, you know, those things made such a huge difference. And then when it came time to think about fellowship, applying for residency was very different than applying for fellowship because I went into residency unmarried with no children. And I came out of a 7-year residency married with 2 kids. And so it was a very different landscape. And so when we were looking for places for fellowship, we were looking for places with family and family support. And so Gainesville, Florida, which is home of University of Florida, the Gators. My husband actually was born here and he has family here and he has cousins here and cousins' kids and all these things.
Yeah, wow. Sounds like you've had such an incredible path and also have kind of been all over the country almost.
Interesting. Yeah, medicine is interesting in that there's so many gaps along the way that you end up moving from place to place. And some people stay their whole career at the same place, but there's a lot of value in seeing different perspectives, seeing different hospitals, the way hospitals are run, the different associated facilities. It's really helpful seeing the different ways a hospital can be set up. It gives you a better sense for what you're looking for, I think, in the future. And you get to see different parts of the country. My father was in the Air Force. And so we had moved with that. And that's how I ended up in San Antonio in the first place.
I'm so interested to, you know, you brought up the way training at different institutions sort of shapes who you are as a surgeon and also how you practice just overall. And I was wondering if you have any sort of big takeaways from your time. I know you were a medical student at San Antonio and then at Colorado. And if you feel that obviously Gainesville has family, but also if UF, you sort of made that transition because something drew you there because of your previous training.
I think a lot of times the transitions in life are made for different reasons. It's interesting going from different places because there's some things that are very universal and there's some things that are different. And I think understanding the things that are universal and understanding the things that are different just because it's a different hospital, different location, different support, I think it makes a difference getting all those experiences. I think that every hospital and location offers something different. Patient populations can be very different. The disease processes can be different. In Colorado, we saw a lot of ski injuries. So it was both blunt trauma, but also a lot of penetrating trauma because it was a big city. And so we got to see a lot of different kinds of trauma. And that really helped shape my ability to sort of take care of anything, anytime. And I like that. I like knowing that, you know, when they call for a doctor on the plane, I don't hesitate at all because I feel like, show me what it is. I can try and help you. There was a car accident on the side of the road and there was a person in the passenger seat that was pulseless. And I happened to be one of the first responders. And so we had the police take the patient out of the passenger seat and I started doing CPR and the patient made it to the hospital. She didn't survive, but our trauma surgeons here at UF could say, literally there was nothing else that can be done. And I didn't hesitate because that's just part of trauma that I learned in general surgery. And then it's part of CT surgery, not hesitating to react. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about surgery is the ability to not hesitate to act.
It's nice that you're still able to use your skills from general surgery and trauma surgery too. I'm curious, as you're the associate program director of I-6 programs, and having been someone who didn't really have any CT surgery experience in medical school, as a lot of us really don't, I'm curious your opinion on the pros and cons of going through general surgery to CT versus just going straight into an I-6 and what you think of it.
I think slowly all of medicine gets more complicated. There's more disease processes, there's more treatments, there's more medications, there's more interventions, there's open, there's robotic, there's endovascular, there's a million different ways to do the same procedure. And I think at some point you need people that are specialized in that. And with that comes the need for earlier and separate training. So if you were to take back in the day, many years ago, there's either people that operate and there's people that don't. People that treat people non-operatively or people that use knives to help heal people. And slowly but surely, from that has branched off many different types of surgery, orthopedic surgery, ENT, ophthalmology, plastic surgery. I mean, you name it, every part of the body's got a specialty. And general surgery traditionally was a arduous training program where you get comprehensive education to treat basically anything in the body. But then you add on laparoscopic surgery. So now you're learning how to do an open colectomy, a laparoscopic colectomy, and a robotic colectomy, and when to use each and how to use each. And so what was one open procedure now has become three different procedures. And so how can one learn that all at the same time that you're trying to rotate through ENT and rotate through neurosurgery and rotate through ortho, which is what, you know, general surgeons used to be able to rotate through lots of different specialties. And then slowly but surely, you know, things drop out. Neurosurgeons don't rotate on general surgery. Orthopedic surgeons don't rotate on general surgery. General surgeons don't rotate on ortho because it's become very different. So just imagine every 5 to 10 years, all of these things are added on. And so things continue to split apart. Even thoracic and cardiac continue to become more and more different because there's so many different modalities for treatment. And so, again, for general surgery as its own standalone entity, there's even ways to do fellowships in general surgery for trauma and for minimally invasive, because it's just so complicated. Mm-hmm. What's nice about going the traditional route through general surgery is you are or can be a board certified general surgeon. And during COVID, for instance, I was in my last few months of my fellowship for CT, and I was already board certified in general surgery. And so the hospital gave emergency privileges for anyone who was board certified in general surgery, because I can run an ICU. I can, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do with that. And you needed people who potentially could independently do things in the hospital. And so having that board certification can never be taken away. I could go help in different places globally and not necessarily do heart surgery. I could help doing other kinds of general surgery. And it leaves doors open, which is really nice. You know, I had never performed heart surgery until I was in my fellowship. So maybe I wouldn't have been good at it. And I wouldn't have necessarily known that. And then at least I would have had general surgery to fall back on. So that's a good part to it. The bad part is it was a lot of years. And Most people recommend you do 2 years of research so that you can network and, you know, have a good CV for applying to an academic fellowship. And so that's 7 years. So, you know, having gone straight through and doing a 3-year fellowship and a 7-year general surgery, I mean, that's 10 years. And we lose a lot of really good applicants because that time schedule is really challenging. For anyone, it's challenging, but on paper, people start thinking about, can I do that and have a family? Can I do that and have kids? You know, does that delay when I start making money? I have debt, I have expenses, and my parents are sick, whatever you fill in the blank, whatever stressor there is. If you could do it in 6 years instead of 10, that's not so bad. No. You lose something though, doing it in 6 years instead of in 10 years. You lose some introduction to other types of operations, working with other surgeons, knowing the kinds of surgeries that they can do, when you should consult for some of these problems. You lose sort of some of that. You lose the leadership that you gain on trauma rotations as a general surgery chief resident. But the things you gain in an I6 program, you're looking at echoes and caths, endovascular skills during your intern year versus I didn't really know how to read an echo until the end of my first year of fellowship. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, my PGY8 year, I was learning how to read a cath versus the I6 residents are learning it as an intern. And so they're better set up to have a hybrid practice of interventional skills and open cardiac skills. So it's just different.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for medical students who might not have, you know, any exposure to CT or might not know if they would like it or want to apply to I6?
I think the most important thing for medicine is to follow your passion within the realm of what your CV is appropriate for. I think knowing your grades, your exam scores, your support system, your mentors, within that framework, whatever you are passionate about is really the best case scenario, because it's hard work no matter how you do it or what you do. If it's a short day or a long day, it's always going to be hard work. And one of the hardest rotations I did in medical school was with an outpatient family medicine doctor that owned his own practice. And he was amazing at his job and he did so much for his patients. And, you know, it was 9 to 5 and I was exhausted. And we'd get up in the morning and then I'd go right back to the office and think, oh my gosh, it's a whole new set of people in clinic again. It's exhausting. And it was 6 weeks in a row. And at the end, I couldn't even imagine doing that for the rest of my life. It was pure exhaustion versus doing a 24-hour call for trauma felt like fun. The next trauma would come in and was like, yes, we're doing this. Okay, what's next? Who needs to go to the operating room? Who's got a wound that needs to be sewn up? Who needs a chest tube? Who needs a this? Like, put me in, coach. Like, I'm ready. And so that I knew that it was right for me. I couldn't imagine not being in it and having my hands on something, making something, changing something with my hands. It was really the only thing that made sense for me.
That really resonates with me. I totally had the same experience on my 6 weeks of my family medicine rotation. Yeah. It's like, feels like the hardest work of my life.
I sort of felt like surgery was a place that I could excel, and luckily, my passion lined up with what I turned out to be good enough at. And so you just put one foot in front of the other. And the next thing you know, it's been 15 years since medical school.
Yeah, time really flies. I kind of wanted to bring it back to what you talked about earlier in terms of mentorship and how there were no other females in CT surgery when you were rotating through. And I'm just curious what mentorship has looked like for you along the way. And now that you're an attending, was it different with the representation of females in CT surgery? What's the future like as well?
Yeah, you know, I have had outstanding mentors along the way. When I was in medical school, I had great mentors. And then going through general surgery, I had outstanding mentors and people that were willing to put their name on the line for me in recommendation letters and making phone calls and things like that. And I didn't know that I was missing anything. I grew up with an older brother and my mom was a sports gal and I played a bunch of sports. And so all my coaches were men. And so it really never occurred to me that I was missing something until the more senior I became, the more people reached out to me for mentorship, and that I realized that they were looking for something that they weren't getting somewhere else, and that I could provide that. And the more senior I become, the better mentor I can be. I started out more like a cheerleader, as in, if I can do it, you can do it. And then it sort of became more of, what are opportunities that I know of that I can pass along to you? What things can I bring along for you as well? And now I know as well that as I got further into my surgical career and I felt like it was okay to ask for mentorship beyond where I was located, is when I sort of realized that there was more out there and I just needed to ask for it. And I just never wanted to ask for help because I was still in a realm of feeling like I needed to prove myself, that I didn't need any help, which is wrong. Of course you need help. And people provided lots of help, but it was just all male mentorship. And so when I finally had finished CT surgery is when I actually reached out to several people, and many people I would consider friends and mentors. And it's not even people you necessarily see in person a lot, but just are advocates for you on paper. And when opportunities come up, they think about you. It's just nice to know that there are people out there that are ahead of you that have opportunities that they want to share.
Yeah, going through it now, I can definitely relate to also being afraid to ask for things and not feeling like, you know, you're worthy of asking for things when you're kind of bottom of the totem pole. I think surgery has a lot of hierarchy in it, and it's sometimes hard to get past, but part of the purpose of this whole Wiser group also is to inspire female mentorship and make it more comfortable for women to ask other women for mentorship and those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a lot of fun getting to see people grow through the process, having people that I've interviewed for medical school go through and then come to workshops that I'm putting on for aortic anastomoses, and that they're just excited.
This whole conversation has really made me think about how medical training is, it almost feels like we're perpetually in a state of transition, and hearing you sort of speak about your journey, I'm very interested to hear more about kind of your transition from fellowship at University of Florida and then into becoming an assistant professor and then now an assistant program director. If you could just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think that is the scariest transition of them all, because there's always been somebody to call, and there's still someone to call, which is why you have to end up somewhere where you have good mentorship, because you don't all of a sudden just go from needing help to needing no help. And I think the maturity is knowing when you need to call for help So it's a big transition going from a fellow to an attending where you're the person that someone's calling for help. And I think what the hardest part is that it is decisions left and right all day, even from the tiniest minutiae to the biggest decisions of them all. And it's just, it's all day. And so at the end of a call weekend, I often have decision fatigue where you're just mentally done making decisions. And sometimes you're making a decision about things that you don't even really care about, but you have to make the decision either way. Like with surgery, what kind of chest tubes do you want? What size chest tube? How many of them? You know, how many wires do you want to put in? What configuration? All these things. It's decision, decisions, decisions. And eventually you get to have a favorite way that you do it. And so it gets easier and easier. But as a fellow or as a resident, you know the way each of your attending does it. And so when you're doing a case with that attending, you do it that way. Mm-hmm. So you always know the way because mm-hmm. you're doing it their way. And then all of a sudden you finish and you have to figure out what's my way. And you sort of take a little from everybody and meld it together. And some things are universal, some things are different. And figuring out the things that make you more comfortable as a surgeon just comes with time. But it's exhausting. A lot of sleepless nights the night before big operations, a lot of lost sleep over complications, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, you know, all those things are normal and you know they're normal. And that's where having a different kind of support comes in handy. So having fellow trainees that are going through a similar process is hugely important. So some of my best friends in training are, they're not just friends. They're also your support system. They're your therapist. One of my best friends in the world is someone who's a heart surgeon in Pennsylvania, and he was 1 year behind me in training. And so Tyler Wallen and I speak on the phone several times a week. And some of it is to talk about medicine and run patient care decisions. You know, does this sound reasonable? What do you think about this? And then the other part is just talking out complications you've had and should I have done something different? Is it because I'm a new surgeon? I think it's just, it's nice to have people at the same level because then you know that you're not on an island. And then above all else, you have to have surgical mentors that are basically your surgical parents, the people that you can call for help when you're in over your head. And being in a place like UF has been outstanding because I have a lot of people who I know at 2 a.m., if I call them on the phone, they're going to be at the hospital within 30 minutes to help me. And there's really no substitute for that kind of support. Mm-hmm. It's imperative, especially in heart surgery. It's a 10-year process to go from fellowship to attendinghood. And even still, 20 years in, if you need help, you got to make that phone call.
Yeah. I think that's what I love about surgery is even when you're an attending and you've done 10 years of training, you're still functioning like a team and you're still relying on people.
1,000% a team sport.
Well, I think you've had such amazing insight and it's been incredible to hear about your career, honestly. And there's so much good advice in this podcast for medical students and residents. I think just to wrap it up and to hear more about you and what you do outside of the OR, is there anything you'd like to do for fun, any hobbies or passions?
Right now we are knee deep in kids' sports. We have our own hobbies, but right now our hobbies are sort of taking a back seat. We've got travel soccer and travel softball and baseball and basketball for my older one and piano and all those things. It's fun seeing the kids flourishing, seeing parts of yourself in them, seeing them excel, has been fun. And we like doing board games as a family. That's a lot of fun. It's more like autopilot. I think back and look back to when I was in general surgery and they were infants. And that was really hard. I'd be happy to come back one day and tell you my life hacks for making a dual surgeon household run somewhat effectively, I would say.
Please.
We're still perfecting it.
I feel like that would be useful for a lot of listeners. We like to ask at the end of our podcast, just like final questions, is your favorite music to listen to in the OR, if you have any song, your album or playlist?
I do. I like classic rock is usually my go-to. And then I'll do pop music is my second choice. And then if it's Christmas time, I will do Christmas music. And I don't care if it starts in November.
Okay, that's awesome. We'll have to add some songs to our Wiser playlist. Well, thank you.
That would be awesome.
This was truly, truly amazing. I feel like we could ask you questions all day, but we want to respect your time. And I know you have a busy household. So thank you again for doing this.
Great. It was great to talk with you guys.
Thank you for tuning into another episode of Wiser. If you liked this episode, please rate and leave a review as it helps others find the show. You can also share it with friends and family. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter @WiserPodcast.